Hello, my spooky friends.
My name is Cassie.
And I'm Caitlin.
And welcome in to I'd Survive.
Oh my goodness. Hello. How are you? Don't sigh. Things are better. Things are better.
Me immediately shifting eye contact. Okay. No, things are slowly back on track. It feels slow right now. And it's like once you have like a crazy couple weeks that just throws you for a spin and you're behind and blah, 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 you think that like once you get your PC back and you can start work again, that you can just like get right back on track. But it takes time when you are without it for 2 weeks and can't do what you want to do for 2 weeks. So I'm in that phase where, yeah, I need to give myself grace and patience to get back on track now. But everything is going to plan. Everything is fine.
That's good. That's good. We're getting there. How's the horror world been for you?
Okay. I'm actually really, really excited for this conversation because first of all, I've not watched a new horror movie. Okay.
Oh, okay.
But I have seen the scariest thing that I think I will ever see in my life. And I have never been more scared watching something. I've never had something keep me up in my adult life like this has.
Oh, dear.
And it is a certain episode of Twin Peaks.
Ah.
Yeah.
I see.
I've been watching Twin Peaks for the first time. I'm on season two right now. And there's just an episode where I was genuinely like, I think my jaw was on the floor and my blanket was like in a vice grip. And I couldn't believe what was happening. But like, I was like jolting back. Like,
whoa.
I was like I felt too close to the screen. Like, it was the scaredest I've ever been.
That's crazy.
And I don't think Twin Peaks gets tagged as horror, although you could definitely – it does have horror elements in like sequences.
Sure.
But you wouldn't think of it that way. The villain, I guess, that is in Twin Peaks, someone asked me – I was talking about this.
Oh, I saw a clip.
You did.
I saw a clip.
Someone was like, wait, so if I can handle Pennywise, can I handle this villain? Mm-hmm. And I was like, Oh, honey, I would rather like do, and I don't know remember what I said, but I would literally rather like go on a date, like marry Pennywise, make out with Pennywise before I'm like on the same earth as this villain.
That's crazy.
In Twin Peaks. So yes, it of course, like I was excited to tell you this because I know already that you're like, oh yeah, I would love to watch Twin Peaks one day.
Yeah.
I needed you to hear this because I feel like it wouldn't just entice you more, but it's just the darkest shit ever. Like wow. Genuinely.
That's really interesting. No, that makes me even more excited to eventually get there.
Yes.
You knew it would.
I know.
It was scary. It was dark. It was disturbing. Here you go.
Yep.
I've actually watched quite a bit of horror. I watched a movie called Child's Play. it's featuring a doll named Chucky.
Yeah.
Which was really fun because this is a franchise that I really just put off forever because I was like, no, there's no way I'm going to like that. Like that. Mm-hmm. What is that? You know, so much different than I expected and less comedic than I expected, which I hear they get more comedic later on. But the first one is really not that funny. Like, it's legit scary. And I really liked it.
Yeah, I knew you would like the first one. I was excited. Well, I will say, like, Ghostface is my number one favorite horror villain, but Chucky is my number two favorite villain. It's not my number two movie or my number two franchise, but villain.
Yeah.
Chucky's so good. But yeah, the first one is just, I think, genuinely good. And then they get ridiculous.
I'm sure.
But I'm hoping that on your own time or on camera that you'll make it to that series that came out in the last couple of years, the Chucky series, because it is so good.
Really? I'm like surprised to hear you say that, like just that it's good, you know? But like that's me again coming from a place of like there's no way it could be good.
Yeah, I think the franchise does turn into what you expected going in, but hopefully, like, your love for Chucky, mm-hmm. like, as a horror villain will get you through it, yeah. you know?
I also watched Friday the 13th Part 2 just the other day, which, like, it's a movie. You know what I mean? It's not bad. Yeah. It's, for me, essentially what I experienced was the first two-thirds were, like, eh. The final act, great. Mm. Like, really, really fun final act that just kind of went all over the place. And I finally actually was aware of who the killer was this time. Unlike when I watched the first one, it was like, oh, Jason. And then, yeah. You know. But it was fun. And it's, you know, watching Child's Play, Friday the 13th, I say it all the time. These are franchises I want to explore every single movie, you know?
Yeah.
Just going to take big a little task. Time. Yeah. Yeah. It's a big one. And last but certainly not least, actually, probably my favorite of these three is the fact that I've been playing Resident Evil video games.
Ooh, yeah.
I played one, the remake, which came out in 2002, I think. Really, like, cool to play an older game like that because I don't play a lot of older games. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know, really neat. And then Resident Evil 2 remake is amazing. Like, the game has just been so, so fun. And, like, just satisfying as all hell to play and scary and...
You are making me want to play them.
I really want you to play.
Like, I'm a little confused as to why people just told me to jump straight to 7 and 8 when you are having such a good time with 1 and 2. Because I am someone who enjoys starting from the beginning and experiencing an entire thing.
Right.
But I was just like, literally everyone was like, don't.
Yeah.
Everyone told me not to and just do 7 and 8. Like, we know you'll like 7, just do 7 and 8. So I did.
Yeah.
But now with how much you're liking it and Caitlin has told me as well, like off mic.
Off mic, baby.
The record, that she thinks that I personally would really love these games. So I'm like, well, damn. Maybe I need to do that then. So yeah,
I do recommend. 7 and 8 are great. And, like, in some ways I, like, get that. But, like, 2 is just as good as 7 and 8. Like, the remake at least. Because the original came out in, like, 98 or something. Or early 2000s. Remake is 2019. So it's, like, looks beautiful. So I do recommend at least 1 and 2. I can recommend so far,
right?
So yeah,
I think I'll do it.
You should. But that's all I got for horror, besides this other movie that we are going to talk about today. It's a movie called Cube from 1997, and I actually saw this movie for the first time in about 10 years ago or so, and I remember liking it because
I didn't know you watched this already.
Oh, yeah. Oh. I saw this. It's funny. I watched it with my ex-boyfriend. I remember we were in this era. We watched Cube and Circle back to back, which are two not similar, but have a similar vibe in a way.
Okay.
And I remember liking this because it covers a lot of the stuff that we both like, including isolated environment.
Yes.
And just mindfuckery type stuff. So,
okay.
So the background on the movie that I can give you up front is very short. And that is that it is a Canadian film directed and written by Vincenzo Natali. And you'd probably know him if anything from the movie In the Tall Grass from 2019.
Okay.
I have not seen that, but I always see it on Netflix. It's always there. And it's hello.
That's one that I've just heard of.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He has some other movies, but I wasn't familiar with those. And there is actually a lot of really cool background on this movie, but I can't talk about it now because it would spoil the entire movie. So we'll do a little chat at the end. And again, of course, we will be using the worksheet, TM. Mm. If you would like to participate on the worksheet, you can check out our Discord, which you can access via our Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. There's a worksheet over there you can fill out, submit your own scores, and we give a community score the following week. So if you want to be a part of that, go check that out. And let's get into Cube 1997.
Okay.
The film opens on an unsettling close-up of a man's eyeball as it blinks and looks around.
Ew.
Yeah. This man is laying on the floor, but the floor, it's no ordinary floor. It's made up of square panels that are lit up with white light. In the center of the floor is a different square panel that seems to contain some kind of hatch. There's a T-bar crank in the middle of it.
Okay.
So let me just try and paint this picture for you a little bit. The floor consists of a 3x3 panel layout. Each panel is approximately 4 feet by 4 feet. And in between each panel is a very narrow, like, ladder. It's like a little caved-in area with bars. So it's kind of like little ladders in between all of the panels. This man looks up, and we can see that every surface in this room is exactly the same. 6 identical walls, floor, and ceiling. Yes, we are in a cube. Can you believe it? A cube. So
wait, I do have to ask. Have you ever solved a Rubik's Cube?
Nope. Absolutely not. Me either. Yeah.
Okay, we're dead.
Yeah, no. Couldn't be us. Couldn't be us. So he stands up in his dark gray jumpsuit with the name Alderson printed on the left side. Large sounds surround us, sounds like rumblings and creakings and moanings. And he walks over to one of the walls and he turns that T-bar opening up a hatch. Oh, and let me explain. I wrote explain hatch motion. So the way the door is open, it's not like on a hinge. It's like it pulls out of the wall and slides down.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Okay. Mm-hmm. So he climbs up the little ladder and he peers through the opening. And on the other side is another identical room, except this one is lit with blue light as opposed to white. He descends the ladder back into the white room and the door automatically closes on its own. He checks another hatch and on the other side of that is a red room. He retreats again. Checks another room. In this room, this is orange. And he goes ahead and he climbs on through this hatch. And he lands on the floor below with a thud. He waits a moment in silence before taking a step toward the center of the room. A mechanical swishing sound occurs as a red checkerboard blood pattern starts to show through Alderson's jumpsuit.
Oh.
And looking at his face, we can see 3 thin lines spanning his whole head begin to bleed. Slowly but surely, Alderson's body begins to crumble in diced pieces until every piece of him sits in a nice little pile on the floor. A metal grate sinks down from the ceiling to show us what just sliced itself through him. And it's basically a big panel of like thin wires in a square pattern. It folds itself back up and goes into the ceiling again. And we get the title card for Cube, which is actually low-key reminiscent of Alien's title card. Like, it starts, like, with lines that eventually become letters. So it's kind of fun.
Sure, yeah.
So we come back to another white room, where a man named Quentin climbs through the hatch in the floor. There's a man also already sitting in this room, and he's laying, like, unconscious next to the hatch. He's just laying on the floor there.
It's getting saw.
Right? Quentin seems to have a sense of urgency as he tries to wake the man before quickly checking another room. It's orange. He retreats. When he turns back, the man is sitting up now and looks over to another hatch, like he gives like the eyes to the hatch. And Quentin follows his gaze as that door begins to open. He quickly runs and crouches just beneath it. In crawls an older slash middle-aged woman who Quentin just grabs by the head and throws into the room. The woman screams, and Quentin immediately puts his hands up and apologizes. I thought you were... Quentin begins. What? The woman replies. I don't know, he says, as he continues to survey the room. Suddenly, a young woman begins to scream for help from an adjoining room, so Quentin opens up that door and helps her through. As she makes her way through the hatch, her very cute gold glasses fall off and crack on the floor. She seems stressed and afraid, but again, Quentin tries to calm her. The top hatch opens now, and an older gentleman peers his head through, looking down at them. How many people are in this thing? Quentin mumbles. This man makes his way down to the floor and starts to untie his boots, while Quentin tells everyone that we can't go climbing around here. The rooms have traps. He nearly got his head cut off a few rooms over.
Like, are we not worried? Like, are we just not concerned? Do we just live in a cube and we're okay with that? Like,
no.
What is everyone thinking is happening?
There's panic. There's
everyone's panicking. They don't know where they are. Oh, is that
funny,
the next line?
The next line. Everyone seems frazzled, scared, and confused.
Okay.
I got
perfect.
You. I got you.
You knew when I needed that information.
Exactly. But let's get acquainted with all of these people. So, of course, we have Quentin. And he's been Mr. Proactive, Mr. Running Around the Room, trying to figure out what's going on. That man that was sitting on the floor when Quentin arrived, his name is Worth. The first woman to crawl in after Quentin, her name is Holloway. And the girl who screamed for help, that's Levin. And finally, the man who just crawled in from the ceiling is Ren, spelled R-E-N-N-E-S.
Okay.
Now everyone's in here, everyone's panicked, and Holloway checks on Worth, who has remained quiet and kind of out of it since we've met him. So he tells her that he hit his head and she offers to take a look because she is a doctor.
Perfect.
Perfect, having a doctor around.
Mm-hmm.
Ren stands up now with the laces of his boots clamped in his mouth. Quentin is like, bro, like, what are you doing? What are you up to? And Ren climbs a ladder and opens a door. A blue room sits on the other side. He takes one of his boots and tosses it into the room while still holding onto a lace. A torch swings out from the wall and lights that shoe on fire.
Okay.
As it soars through the air. Yes. Now, everyone's kind of watching in awe as Ren nonchalantly just like reels the shoe back in. And he's like, motion detector integrated into the walls. And he turns back to the group and is like, it's tough to spot. Ren is ready to check another room, but Quentin stops him. Let's take a beat. Let's talk. Like what is going on?
Yeah.
He wants to know if anyone remembers how they got here. Everyone stands in silence for a moment before Holloway just belts out, pierogies.
What?
Yeah. So.
As in the sandwich?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's so me. Yeah. Like food. Brings me most places.
Pierogies! We have another beat as everyone just stares at her. Like, pierogies? What's up? She remembers that the last thing that she did was eat dinner. That's what she remembers.
Okay.
No one seems to have any memory of how they got here. They just woke up and they were here. Only the government could build something this ugly, Holloway says.
Ooh.
Quentin disagrees. This can't be government. Aliens, Holloway whispers to herself. And the groaning and the creaking in the cube returns. So, like, if you're waking up in this cube, what is your thought process?
It could be anything. I wouldn't laugh at it being the government. I wouldn't laugh at it being aliens. I wouldn't laugh at it being some random dude who has too much money and is like has a sick, twisted mind. Mm-hmm. Like, I wouldn't laugh if I was like on a underground dark web reality TV show. Everything, anything could be possible. And I would just be obviously terrified and assuming this ends in all of our deaths.
Sure. I think that's a fair way to come at it because it's just kind of so bizarre.
Yeah.
So Levin starts freaking out because she knows her parents are going to be so worried when they wake up and see that she's gone. She's giving college aged.
Okay.
And Ren plans on moving from room to room in a straight line until he reaches the end. And Quentin thinks, you know, that's not a bad idea. Levin, though, she thinks they should just stay put. And everyone agrees that will probably get them nowhere. Actually,
yeah,
literally.
Yeah, probably starve to death.
Mm-hmm. Quentin and Ren seem like they're the most comfortable taking charge. And while Levin sits in a corner trying to get herself to wake up because she thinks she's in a dream, Quentin comforts her and tells her they're going to get out. People will be looking for them. And we learn that Quentin is a cop, which kind of checks out with the way he's been acting. Very take charge, very figure out, look for clues. Like, what are we dealing with here?
Yeah.
Ren opens up another door and tosses his boot on a leash inside. It lands in the center of the room and nothing happens. Clean, he says, and everyone piles on into that room. They go from there into another room, and as they're crossing through, the rumbling sounds again, and Ren says that the sounds they keep hearing have been coming in regular intervals. Mm. Not sure why or what it means, but...
Oh, no. I hope it isn't... My mind immediately goes to, is it Catching Fire, where, like, the island, like, moves section... Like, different problems move to different areas. Mm. So I'm like, what if, like, this is, like, a constantly moving... contraption that they're in and you think you find the way, but it's constantly moving and you don't.
Levin is crawling through this little passageway now, and she takes note of some numbers that are inscribed on a thin strip of metal at the entrance to this room. They are written in three groups of three: 566 472 737. The inscription on the room they're leaving reads 476 804-539. Quentin, Worth, Holloway, and Levin crowd around the numbers, and Worth is like, great, so we've got 566 million rooms in here?
Yeah.
And Holloway's like, well, there better not be. And she starts going off about lack of food, water, you know, mm-hmm. and the fact that they're going to starve, they're going to dehydrate because they're going to be needing to use a lot of physical exertion in here. And she's yeah. just going off medical type stuff. She's going on and on in a panicked but matter-of-fact tone when Ren walks over and rips something off her jumpsuit. Suck on it, he says.
What are we sucking on?
He shows his tongue where we can see that he has a button in his mouth. He hands Holloway back her button saying, it keeps the saliva flowing.
Oh.
Which, like, I don't know. Does that work?
I've never heard that either, but my thought process would be like, I could see that working, but I could also see it like just like drying you out as well. Like,
right.
The science makes sense both ways in my mind. So, okay, sir.
So, like, I'll believe you because I don't know science, I guess, right?
Yeah.
A fade to black signals the passage of time, and they actually do this a lot in this movie. Mm-hmm. I guess it's kind of giving like made for TV the way it fades to black, but it's not. It's like a weird, I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
So it fades black, passage of time, and Ren is throwing his boot into another room. Nothing happens as the boot hits the floor, but Ren does not give the group the immediate green light. He gives the air a sniff.
Mm-hmm.
Air seems dry in there, he says. So Levin's like, okay, so like, is it trapped? Molecular chemical sensor, Ren says.
Oh.
So Quentin asks why the boot didn't set it off. Well, it's not alive, obviously. It detects hydrogen sulfide excreted from the skin. Now, Quentin's low-key sus. Like, okay, but how do you know that?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Like, you're in on this.
But then it hits him. Wait, your name is Ren? Like the Ren? A sensor expert. Quentin laughs and everyone else is like, what? We don't get it. This guy, Ren, has escaped from 7 major prisons around the world. So I guess you could say his profession is escape artist.
Oh, wait, but why has he been put in prison?
Great question.
Oh, that's a little scary, but also great.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. Like, works for us.
Like, oh, perfect. Everyone's looking at him like, all right, so you're going to save us. You're going to get us out of here. But Ren sets the record straight. The only reason I've dragged you this far is because I need your boots, he says. If you don't smarten up, I'm gone like that.
Yeah.
He tells them that they need to stop talking, stop thinking about anything that's not right in front of them. He swings himself into the next room. As he hits the floor, we hear a click. Oh, that's right. He turns to the camera and he goes, oh, hopefully I'm not saying this wrong. Merde? And I had to look it up.
Wait, is that like death?
No, it's a French way of saying like shit or damn it.
Oh.
Because he's French. So it's funny because I'm like, I kept listening to it. I'm like, I don't know what he's saying.
Yeah, what is
he saying? I had to look up the script and I was like, oh, he's like, shit.
Okay, that makes sense. Because so, what the floor pressed in.
He heard a click. Okay. In this room as soon as he got in there. And he whips around as a mechanical arm extends from the wall, spraying a liquid onto his face. He screams and his hands go up to cover his eyes. The door to the room slams shut. The group on the other side looks mortified and Quentin jumps for the door, screaming, get him out! But before he can reach it, it opens and Ren is bursting through from the other side. His face is burnt and melted down to the tendons beneath, and he screams in pain. The group drags his body back into the room with them, but it's too late.
Oh my God.
Ren twitches and writhes on the floor, his face continuing to simmer deeper and deeper into his head. As the acid begins to wind down, Ren dies. And his face is nasty. The best way I can describe this, and it's not going to make sense, but trust me, this is what it looks like. It looks like a bread bowl.
What?
It looks like a bread bowl. A bread bowl with ketchup specifically. Oh, but like it's like white and like foaming and it looks like bread. It's disgusting.
That's uncomfortable. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty awful.
Also, what like, what do you mean? Already? Like, he's the main guy and he's dead now. Yeah. So that's great. That's great. That's
or
great
like,
for me.
Or like, great. Oh my God, this guy can figure out the traps.
Right.
And then, no. So now Quentin, Levin, and Holloway are looking at him, just completely horrified. But Worth is staring with what seems to be more of an anger. And he's been quiet this whole time. Some time passes and the group hasn't moved because if the Wren miss something, how will they ever be able to traverse the cube? Yeah. So they have to reassess. Holloway and Levin are stuck on why they're in here, but Quentin encourages them to forget all of that right now. They are here, so let's focus on that.
Okay.
Quentin notes that Wren was an escape artist. Holloway's a doctor. He's a cop. Maybe their professions are meant to be useful in here somehow. So he asks Levin, what is she? Nothing, she replies weakly. I just go to school. Holloway still wants to focus on bigger picture. What does it want? What is it thinking? One down, four to go, pipes up Worth, dully from his spot in the corner.
What does Worth do? I need to know. He's freaking me out.
Mm-hmm. The group looks at him, warily. Why don't you tell us what your purpose is, Worth? Quentin says. I wonder that myself, he replies. Worth tells us that he's just a regular guy working in a regular office doing regular office stuff. He's not anyone remarkable. He then throws the question back at Quentin. What's your purpose? His kids. He has three of them. I haven't made my peace yet, he says. So that's what's keeping him motivated right now to get out of here. He tells everyone else they need to find theirs, their purpose, if they want any chance of getting out of here. They need to find strength together. So Holloway's motivation is how pissed she is that anyone would do this to them. She's quite sad, actually, about the fact that her rings and her precious amethyst necklace were taken off of her. And this causes a bit of a light bulb to go off in Quentin's mind. Levin's reading glasses. Everyone had been stripped of everything on them, but they specifically put her reading glasses on her before putting in her in here. Quentin goes to a doorway to take another look at the numbers before asking Levin what is it that she does in school. Math.
Oh.
Levin takes...
Good thing. Because when you mentioned numbers before, I was like, okay, well, that's nice. I'm still dead. extra dead now.
Me too, girl. Yeah. Me too. Levin takes another look at the numbers. In studying the numbers of the surrounding rooms, it hits her. Prime numbers. I can't believe I didn't see it before, she says. Like, oh, duh. Yeah, prime numbers.
Of course.
So for anyone who doesn't know or remember, a prime number is a natural number greater than one that has exactly two factors, one in itself, aka it is not divisible by any other number, just in case. Because I honestly had kind of forgotten what a prime number even was.
Yeah.
So what Levin can put together here is that any room containing a prime number in its sequence is trapped.
Oh.
So this room coming up, 645, 372, 649, those three numbers are not prime, so that means that that room is safe.
Oh, well, this is so easy then, right?
So Quentin's like, whoa. So you're making a leap off of one room here. But she explains that she remembers the numbers from all the trapped rooms, and they contained prime numbers. She's just like that. You know, she has a knack for remembering things.
Wow.
Levin, you beautiful brain, Quentin says, grabbing Levin's face before turning to Holloway. Boot it, he says. She does, and it's safe.
Wow.
So Levin wastes no time jumping in after the boot. She jumps with joy. Prime numbers! Prime numbers! She screams.
Okay.
Yes.
I don't think I would be, like, excited. It's so funny that she's excited because I'd be like, well, fucking great. That's good. But what's going to be at the end of this? Like, where are we? Like, I'm not excited. I'm not, like, in a cornfield maze on Halloween for fun. Like, what's exactly. going on?
A montage ensues now. Levin has got her thinking cap on, and we see the numbers, the room spin. There's a whisper in our ear that's like a soundtrack in a way, and it's just somebody going, and it's like, this is really unsettling. Thank you so much for this.
I love that.
So we've been in here about 10 hours now, moving from room to room, and Holloway is starting to go a little stir crazy. She insists that she needs a smoke, even though she quit years ago. Quentin's like, okay, let's chat. like, let's just try to chat and try to calm down a little. So Holloway asks Quentin about his life, about his kids. He has three boys ranging from ages 5 to 9. Ooh, poor woman, Holloway says. No way I'd survive that. Mm. She didn't either, says Holloway.
Oh.
And exactly. The others sit awkwardly in this silence before Quentin says, oh, she's alive. We're just separated.
Oh.
It's like, oh.
Okay.
Bro.
You had to have known how that came across.
Uh-huh. I think we all thought the same thing.
Yeah.
Holloway's like, oh, okay. Well, this isn't working. I can't just shoot the breeze right now.
Mm-hmm.
So Levin just found the next safe room. Let's keep going. Let's keep moving.
Mm-hmm.
In this next room, Levin has checked every door and none of them are safe.
Oh.
Well, actually, she hasn't checked the one on the ceiling yet.
Oh. Are they always on? Did they know this whole time that there have been ceiling ones as well?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But she just like kind of like forgot about it.
Yeah.
So Quentin climbs up there. He monkey bars his way to the center of the room. He opens up the hatch and a screaming body falls through into the room with them. Act one, check in.
A screaming body.
A screaming body fell into the room with them.
That's so weird.
Yeah.
It's, okay. I don't know why this is like feeling like Lost to me. Probably because I've been watching Lost.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So it's just on my brain. But like just being like waking up somewhere where we're like, what just happened? Where are we? What's up with this place?
Yep.
And like, oh, who is that? Like what? It's just, yeah, definitely you use the word mindfuckery and that's definitely already happening. So
for sure.
Okay.
So I have some questions for you. Mm-hmm. And here they are. There are four questions. So 1A, do you come up with the boot method?
Okay. I think yes. Like definitely in the upper half here, like when you realize thing like rooms get activated, well, mm-hmm. let's throw something in there.
Sure.
I'll say like honestly like an 87.
Nice. I gave myself a 72. I would like to think I'd come up with that, but
sure.
I don't know.
And I know it's hard to gauge when this is so like such an outlandish, weird situation.
Right, right. 1B, can you sense dry air and flag it as a threat?
So I don't know. You actually, sure. No. Flag it as a threat is where I would.
Right.
I'm not sure because, yes, I can feel when it's a humid day. I have more humidity in my area than like a really dry day, like that dry heat that people talking about. I get more humid here. So I'm like, would dry heat just feel normal to me? And I don't realize it's dry because I only do. Okay, I'm overthinking this. Because I wonder if there's a level of dry heat that would feel off to me because I've just not experienced it. And I'm like, whoa, what is it? Why does it feel like that in here?
Yeah.
So there's a chance that if it's extreme enough, I'll be like, wait, something might be up with that room. Because something feels off. But if it's subtle enough, I'd be like, whatever. So I'll go with like a 39% there.
Okay. I gave myself a 5.
Wow.
I don't know if it's just in the way that like Ren like sniffs the air and then he starts talking about like molecular whatever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't think I would jump that. I do think it's interesting though. Yeah. Like you probably would be able to be like, something's different.
Yeah. And you're so on edge in this situation. It's like, maybe I would, like if it was just a haunted house, I wouldn't notice. But if I'm on edge in this specific situation, maybe I would more likely notice.
Sure. 1C, do you escape the acid room? So for some context, he jumps in there. The arm swings up. He has no time to react and it sprays him in the face.
Yeah, I'm going to give myself a 1%.
I went 2. No, I didn't. Okay. I put 3. Never mind. I put
3.
So, yeah. Maybe I ducked, but I don't think so. Like, it's not really that much time. So, agreed. That one's pretty straightforward. And 1D, do you discover the prime number detail?
No. Absolutely not.
No.
The numbers would be so foreign to me. Literally also another 1%.
Okay. I put 2 in like a magical world where maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
But 2 is all I'm giving myself there. I'm not a math girly. Actually, I feel like it's pretty clear that neither of us are math girlies when we're like, okay, yeah. So what? How do we average 44 and 46? No, I'm kidding. But.
Literally. Okay. All right. Act one, I'm looking at a 32% score.
Mm, okay. Yes. I had a 21. So yeah. We're both down there. Not looking great.
No. I don't think this is a very promising survivability score movie.
Yeah. Maybe not. So remember that there was a screaming body falling.
Yes, I do remember.
Room. Yes. So this screaming body is a young man named Kazan.
Oh.
He sits up in a daze. This room is green, he says. He gets up, walking to the nearest wall where he starts lightly tapping his head against it. This room is green, he says again. I want to go back to the blue room. He starts to shake his hands in a way that seems like a sort of tick. And Quentin is like, Holloway, is like, what's going on? Is he in shock?
It seems like this guy might have been in here for a while. Although there has to be food and water then. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Well, Holloway says that she thinks he is mentally handicapped. And I would say like that is definitely what it seems like. So okay. Kazan continues to repeat his desire to find a blue room. And he's muttering something about butter and honey while Holloway tries to calm him and communicate with him. Levin and Quentin seem adverse to having Kazan around for whatever reason. And Worth still keeps to himself. They know the room above them is safe since Kazan just fell from it. So up they all go. But something's going on with Kazan. He's crying out and he's hitting the side of his head over and over again. Holloway says they need to hold a minute before they make him climb. Let him breathe for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin's pissed, but must ultimately agree as we fade to black. When we come back, we are now in a new room. This one is orange. So I'm not really sure how much time has passed, but we've made a little bit of progress.
Okay.
As they traverse, Holloway continues on with more conspiracies. She clearly hates the government and believes in lots of deep missions happening behind their backs. So she and Quentin bicker a bit since he's a cop. He's technically part of that system that she hates so much. And she kind of sees him as part of that equation.
Mm-hmm.
While they're going at it, Levin gives them an annoyed clear from across the room, like, okay, children, like, let's go. We're moving forward. And Holloway heads in first. She jumps down into the room and immediately starts gasping for breath and holding at her throat. The others watch from the opening. Gas, Levin screams. Quentin calls for Holloway to come back to them, but she coughs once more and then says, everything is fine. She just choked on her button.
Oh my God, why are you jumping with a button in your mouth? you don't have to suck on it the whole time.
I know.
Like, if you're starting to feel like your mouth is a little dry, then go for it. But what are we doing?
Girlie really scared us for nothing.
Yeah. I was scared too because I was like, oh shoot, so the prime numbers aren't going to help at all. Okay, this movie is interesting because I'm just like, what? Mm-hmm. If we have the prime numbers to lead us, like, what are we not just, is the whole movie just going to be us walking from room to room the whole time? Like, where is it going then, right. You know?
The rest of the group follows Holloway in to this new room, except for Kazan, who seems to be freaking out back in the last room. So, while Worth, Quentin, and Levin work to find the next safe room, Holloway goes back to comfort him. She is really the only one here who's willing to be patient with him, unfortunately.
Yikes.
So Levin finds the next safe room, and Quentin jumps in first this time. He takes a couple steps before Levin screams at him to stop. He freezes. In front of you, Levin whispers. Quentin has walked into a trap.
Oh.
He is tightly surrounded by thin metal wires that extend from the floor to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
In a single quick motion, they like twist where it like initially tightens at the top and then sweeps down. But Quentin is quick with it. He dives between the wires just before they slice him, managing to get away with only a measly cut on his lower leg. Quentin returns to the last room with the group, and Holloway comes back over to see what's going on. So we kind of have like three rooms in play right now. So it's like a little confusing. The one that he just came out of,
yep.
Where Kazan is, and then the center room.
Yep.
So Holloway quickly attends to Quentin, helping him to wrap his leg. And Quentin is getting real tired of listening to Kazan's cries, and he demands that someone needs to go back there and shut him up. Holloway is busy with the wound, so she asks Worth to go back and stay with him, try to calm him down. When Worth leaves the room, Quentin tells Holloway and Levin that Worth is not saying all he knows. He feels like Worth knew that the room was trapped. And the women don't understand why he would think that or how he could even know that, but Quentin is sure he knows how to read people. Worth has actually managed to calm Kazan and is bringing him back into the room, and he tells the group that Kazan just doesn't like red rooms.
Okay.
So Kazan keeps his eyes closed and covered while the group reconvenes. So what happened? Worth asks. I guess the numbers are more complicated than I thought, Levin says. The group decides to rest for a bit, considering there's not much else they can do. Because now that their, you know, their prime number thing isn't 100% solid. But Levin continues to study the numbers regardless. She must be missing something. In the meantime, Quentin decides he wants to grill Worth a little bit.
Oh, I really thought we were about to go down the burger route.
He wants to grill up some burgers, cook out in the cube.
Like, yeah, relatable. Also with Kazan, I wonder, it's got to be purposeful that he's like, doesn't like red. I'd like take that as a sign that we should avoid the red rooms.
So Worth has done nothing but sit around and be cynical. What's with that? Well, Worth doesn't believe there's any use in trying. Why would they build this just for them to walk out of it?
That's what I would think, too. I'd be like, oh, so we're all going to die today. Okay, cool.
Quentin says there have been clues. Why would they leave clues if they didn't want us to try? Things escalate, and Quentin screams that they need to get out of here. Oh, you're not getting out of here, Worth responds. Yes, we are. No, we're not. It's like this back and forth. The volume in their voices continues to rise when Worth gets in the final word. There's no way out of here, he yells. And the room goes silent. Everyone eyes Worth.
What do you know?
Gotcha, whispers Quentin.
Oh my gosh.
So Holloway asks him how he knows that.
Yeah.
A single tear falls from Worth's eye. I designed the outer shell, he says finally. Oh. Yeah. He tells the group that yes, he built the outer part of where they are now, but he knows nothing of these rooms or the numbers, none of it. He seems beaten down and defeated, but the group asks more questions. He has to be lying. He must know more. Worth was contracted to design the shell of an outer cube. He doesn't know who's behind it or who even hired him. He only ever talked to a few people on the phone, a few people who were working on other small details. Quentin is still calling bullshit, but Holloway actually believes him. That's how they stay hidden, she says. You keep everyone separated so the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing. And she goes off again, getting more and more upset as she does. It's all one big operation, and she's been right about it all her life, and she wants to get out of here so she can blow the lid off this thing and expose all of the lies. Holloway, you don't get it, Worth says. And Holloway is more than happy to let him fill her in. Please, I need to know, she says. So Worth says this. It's maybe hard for you to understand, but there's no conspiracy. Nobody's in charge. It's a headless blunder operating under the illusion of a master plan. Can you grasp that?
No.
Big Brother is not watching you.
Oh, wait. What does that mean? Big Brother is not watching you. I've never heard that phrase before. Like, I just immediately think of literally Big Brother, the show.
Oh, so it's kind of, that's kind of what Big Brother means. Like, that, right. The, an over, yeah, like just like an overseeing.
I never really thought about the title of that reality show before, but that's so interesting to hear it in this context and like realize there is context of like, oh, that makes sense for that show.
Yeah. So it's just like he's saying there is nobody monitoring you, watching your every move.
But that's crazy. He said, can you wrap your head around that? I can't. Like then, then what is this? Why is it? Why is it? You know?
Well, and Quentin kind of is in the same boat as you because he's like, just like, what is that even supposed to mean?
Yeah.
But the way Worth sees it is that this had a purpose at some time, but its purpose was lost along the way. And now people have been working on it, not knowing why or for who in a long time. Why put people in it? Quentin asks. Because it's here. You have to use it or admit it's pointless.
Oh.
Quentin tells Worth that he makes him sick. He's like, you make me sick. Uh-huh. I make me sick too. We're both part of the system. I drew a box. You walk a beat. It's like you said, Quentin. Keep your head down. Keep it simple. Just look at what's in front of you. I mean, nobody wants to see the big picture. Life's too complicated. Let's face it. The reason we're in here is that it's out of control. And this conversation is very weird. Very like, what are we talking about? And that's okay. Like, if you're confused, I was so confused. And we'll talk about this a little more later because this is a movie. Well, we'll talk about it. But anyway, Quentin starts beating Worth to a pulp because course, right? But Holloway's like, whoa, he's the only one with any info. So like, maybe don't do that, mm-hmm. you know? Levin asks Worth for more details regarding the shell and its features. Like, what do you know? You have to know something. Mm-hmm. And all Worth can really provide is the dimensions of the cube and the fact that it does contain a door somewhere, but he has no idea where it is.
Okay, that's all we need to know. Like, we can get out then.
Right. So the outer shell is 434 square feet, and there is space between the last wall of a cube room and the outer shell, so probably about mm-hmm. the length of a room. So given that each room is about 14 by 14 by 14, we can assume that the cube is 26 by 26 rooms, leaving us with approximately 17,576 rooms total.
Oh.
That doesn't seem right, but it is.
I get what you mean, but I can't fathom.
I can't fathom either.
17,000 rooms?
Yeah.
Is crazy.
I'm not a math person, so I'm sitting there like, huh?
Yeah.
How? But you know what? Sure. Whatever you say.
Yeah.
Holloway is about to faint at this new information when something hits Levin. Descartes. Wait, how do you say that? I already forget. Descartes, she says. D-E-S-C-A-R-T-E-S. Descartes?
I don't even know that
word. Yeah, no, same. She says that word. And then she So she opens up a hatch and takes another look at the numbers, right?
Mm-hmm.
I wrote, my next line is literally just, bear with me.
Oh, God. Okay.
So these are coded Cartesian coordinates used in geometry to plot points on three-dimensional graphs.
Got it.
So essentially, these numbers should tell us where we are inside the cube. So Quentin asks, like, okay, so where are we then? Mm-hmm. And Levin starts scribbling away, and she doesn't really explain what she's doing, but she adds all the numbers together and then discovers that their x coordinate is 19 and that they are 7 rooms from the edge.
Oh, that's crazy. That's great.
Right. So, like, let's go. We don't know what we'll do when we get there, but it's the best lead that we've had.
Mm-hmm.
So we may not have a foolproof way of checking for safe rooms, but we can cut down on the risk with the numbers being prime and the boots. Mm-hmm. And they will also take turns entering the rooms first.
Yeah.
So a little while later, Levin is studying the coordinates in the next room, 14, 27, 14. But that doesn't make sense because there should only be 26 rooms, which puts this room outside of the cube. But it's not outside of the cube because opening up the other hatches, there's rooms all around it.
Mm-hmm.
In this room, they open the hatch in the floor, hoping to find a safe room since every other room has been trapped. And when the door opens, Kazan just yells out, "Trap!"
Mm-hmm.
And once again, we see thin metal wires slice their way through this adjoining room. The trap resets and Kazan yells again. Trap goes off again.
Is it a red room?
It's blue, I think.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So this room is sound activated.
Mm.
The sound of the door, just as a side note, doesn't seem to set off this trap, so it must be programmed to keep that noise because the doors are very loud.
Okay.
But we've come to the end. The only safe door is the one that they came from. Mm-hmm. So they either backtrack or they try to go through the sound-activated room.
Oh, God. Okay. Someone's going to die. Someone's going to die. Someone's going to, like, breathe. It's going to be, like, a close-up on the mouth, and it goes, and then they die.
Okay. So, given their situation, this has to be the best option right now. They don't have unlimited time. They're down to having one boot left, so they have to try. Now, remember, they're also entering from the ceiling. So it makes it particularly tricky.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin then lets everyone know that Kazan will not be joining them. It's too risky.
Oh.
Because he has outbursts.
Is Kazan's like, Kazan can understand, can communicate. You know what I mean? Like, if we told Kazan, like, okay, this next room, it is a trap, but the only way to avoid it is if you stay very quiet. Like, does he have the mental capacity to understand and follow through with that?
It seems yes, but it's not an easy thing to do. So something I will say, this movie is the one of the criticisms of it is poor portrayal of autism. That is what this is meant to be.
Okay.
But people take issue with the way that it was portrayed. Now, I can't even really speak on it because I'm not very educated on the different ways that autism can reveal itself. But just as, so everyone knows, that is one thing this movie is criticized
for. Got it. Yeah.
Holloway obviously pushes back on this. She's not going to leave him here.
Yeah.
And Levin's like, well, we can come back for him. Holloway's like, you know that's not true. You know we're not coming back for him. Like, you're just saying that. He'll be quiet, Worth says. I guess Worth has like some kind of plan because like we fade to black and coming back up, we're ready to go. And Kazan has his mouth covered with two hands as he rocks back and forth. So I guess Worth has tried to communicate with him and has gotten the point across.
Yeah.
Worth is the first one to go into the room. And he, the way they do it, like he goes in head first while the others grab onto his legs and lower him enough to reach the bars where he like flips over and then monkey bars to the side, goes down and opens another hatch. So Levin then has to follow because she's the one who can understand the numbers.
Oh, yeah.
So she follows, same manner. Luckily, the first door that they check, it passes both the boot and the number test.
Amazing.
So Levin and Worth head on in there. Next come Holloway and Kazan. Kazan stays nice and quiet as Holloway helps him cross into the next room. No issues.
Okay.
Once everyone else has made it, Quentin makes his way down. And the group is watching from the opening in the wall. And just as Quentin is about to make his way through the opening, Kazan just lets out a laugh.
Oh.
And panic strikes Quentin's face immediately as he just quickly throws himself through the opening, escaping just in time from the metal wires. So we do know, though, this isn't going to go well. Quentin is pissed. He grabs Kazan and starts swearing at him. And Holloway immediately jumps to Kazan's defense.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin says he's a trap in and of himself. He's endangering the pack. Let go of him, you Nazi! Holloway screams at Quentin. And this pisses him off. So he's going to go off now. Quentin's going to have his moment here. Every day I mop up after your bleeding heart. The only reason why you exist is because I keep you. I know your type. No kids, no man to fuck you. So you go around outraged, sticking your nose up in other people's assholes, sniffing their business. You missed your boat, Holloway. You're all dried up inside there, aren't you? That's your fucking problem.
Like, I didn't expect that.
No.
I knew he wasn't my favorite character, but, like, I didn't hate him either. I was just like, whatever, okay, dude. And then this?
Yeah.
Okay, and so let's throw him in a door.
Yeah, right?
He's gotta go.
And, yeah, this is, like, a really, like, shocking moment because everyone else is sitting there like, what?
Oh, and like, Levin. Who are you? Yeah.
And Levin speaks up and is just like, you do not speak to her that way.
Or anyone. What the fuck?
Actually. And Holloway is like still up in Quentin's face. And she just says, no wonder your wife left you. Period.
Yes.
Exactly. So tension is high, but Levin pipes up now. Is anyone besides me interested in what's on the other side of that door? This is, by the way, the door that should lead to the outside.
Okay.
So Worth approaches the door and opens it slowly. Act two check-in.
Okay.
Yeah. How are we feeling?
I feel confused and upset.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah, you sound like you might be Holloway to an extent. Maybe not. Like, she's a little bit crazy.
She's
but
a lot more conspiracy, but yeah. I can get conspiracy. I definitely can. And I'm definitely team Kazan here. Like,
mm-hmm.
So yes, definitely. If I could relate to anyone, I guess it would be Holloway. I just don't know what this third act is going to bring. Like, if the whole third act is going to be the escape, or if like the third act we're going to escape and then like shit goes down outside of the cube.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah.
So I got three questions for you.
Mm-hmm.
2A, can you escape the metal wire trap? The one that Quentin was in and he dove through. Mm-hmm. So it basically just like does this really quick motion of twisting all the wires and like coming down into like the empty space where he stands, and he like dives through.
I'm going to give myself a straight 50.
Okay.
Because yeah, it's just to do with like speed and agility.
For sure.
And I feel like I have moments where I'm like, oh, okay. And then I have moments where I'm like, well, wow, I need to work on that. So it's just like, can my adrenaline kick my speed and agility to where it needs to be for that moment? I don't know. I would need, like, it's just one of those, you got to experience it to know things.
Right. Okay. I gave myself a 7, so.
Really?
Yeah.
You don't think you could dive in time?
I don't think I could. I don't know. Maybe. I don't think so. I don't trust myself. I don't. 2B.
Okay.
Do you figure out the Cartesian coordinates?
So I've like actually looked into cartography just on like a zodiac sign level.
I love that.
So I think I could recognize it, but I don't think I could like, I would recognize what it is, but I wouldn't know how to apply it.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I would get very far with that. I'll give myself like a 18% there.
Okay. I gave myself a 0.
Okay.
So that's not something that I think I could point out. I will say that the first time I saw the numbers, I did not see it as a big number. I saw it as like latitude, longitude.
Yeah.
But I don't know that, like, kind of like you, I guess, like, I don't think I would know what to do with that necessarily.
Right.
Especially because back-to-back rooms didn't have back-to-back numbers either.
Mm-hmm.
It was just very mixed. Lastly, 2C, did you successfully navigate the sound-activated room?
I actually think I can be pretty quiet.
Mm-hmm.
I've snuck into my house at 5 a.m. many a time.
Ah.
When I was a teenager. And I think I'm going to give myself like a, oh my God, what if my stomach grumbles? Oh, I'm hungry.
Dude, that's always the question. Always the question.
Especially in this situation. Okay. I'm going to give myself though like a 74.
I went 76.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I think that one is not that hard to figure out.
It's like just mistakes happen, but we should be fine.
Exactly.
That brings my score for Act 2 to 36%. All right. I actually am 4% better than last act.
Nice. I'm at 28, bringing myself a little higher than first act as well.
Okay.
So that makes sense. That makes sense.
We're getting a hang of things.
We are. We sure are. So let's head in to our final act. So Worth opens the door slowly. Pure darkness is all they can see through the opening, at least initially. My old friend the shell, Worth says, leaning out. It looks almost as if they're in like a skyscraper, with different hatches to other rooms visible all down the side. We get like an exterior shot looking at them here, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Besides darkness and the shell of the cube, they can see a wall about 14 feet from them across the way, the same 14 feet that would take like a cube.
Yep.
And there's just like this big metal looking wall. And it's not exactly promising because it doesn't look like there's anything going
on
over there. Exactly.
Oh, God.
The only thing they can try is somehow making it over to that wall across the way, maybe. And so they decide that they're going to try and have someone swing over there.
Yeah, it won't be me.
Mm, okay.
I don't have that upper. We've talked about this a lot lately, like my lack of upper body strength. And it is the death of me in a lot of these situations.
Fair. You are not going to need upper body strength. strength for this, believe it or not. So what they do is they make a rope out of clothing, and they're going to have someone like push off the side of the cube, like tie, they're going to tie it around their stomach and have them hold on and push off. Yeah.
That's scary.
Yeah. So Quentin wants to be the one to go, but he's the heaviest of the group. So it doesn't really make sense.
Yeah.
So Holloway volunteers. She says, I'll do it.
Okay.
So what they do is they take off their jumpsuits, and then they have like long john jumpsuits underneath, so it's all chill. But they take off their jumpsuits, they tie those together, tie the one around Holloway's waist, and everyone grabs a section of the rope, and they stay in the room and lower Holloway down the wall as far as she can go. Mm-hmm. She plants her 2 feet on the wall and pushes herself as hard as she can toward the wall across the way. The force is a lot for those holding the rope, but they're able to stay strong. She tries once, then twice, but she can't manage to reach, which, to be honest, like, I don't know what she's reaching for. Anyway, like, it's just a wall.
Right.
And on her third and final attempt, she pushes her feet off the wall, and at the same moment, the rumbling occurs that we've been hearing. So the group panics and drops the rope and falls over as Holloway begins to plummet. And at the last second, Quentin's able to grab the rope, but he starts falling out of the window. And so, like, then the others have to grab his legs, you know, it's like a whole train of people grabbing people. Holloway starts climbing up the rope towards the others, and she makes it up to Quentin, who grabs her hand. They lock eyes, and his face goes dark. Oh. He lets go. Yeah.
What is wrong with him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I would push him out.
Yeah. Well, he slinks back into the room that is now dead silent and they just says.
They know, though. They realize what he did.
She slipped, he says.
I wouldn't believe him.
Right. They have no idea.
That's annoying.
So Levin seems completely defeated, and she goes and sits in the corner of the room. But Quentin tells her that she has to stay strong. They need to work their way down. It'll be easier to check the outside of the shell from the bottom. Worth says he's drained. He needs to sleep. So Quentin's like, fine. Everyone can sleep for an hour, and then we move.
Oh, God.
So we get a sleeping
mug. You know that would fuck me up.
I know, right? Like, an hour now.
I need my 9 hours.
Uh-huh. What do you mean?
Yeah.
So we get a sleeping montage with more of that whispery ta-ta-ta-ta-ta-ta in our ear. And sometime into this nap, Quentin wakes up first, and he takes the boot from Worth, because Worth has been holding the last boot they have, and he like sneakily takes it from him. And then he wakes up Levin, like, and just kind of like kidnaps her into the next room. But like Levin's really tired, so she's just like, okay, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
So once they're over there, Levin's like, what do you want? Mm-hmm. Quentin tells her that they've got to get to the bottom. And she's like, okay, but Kazan, Worth, he again refers to them as traps. We're better without them.
Okay.
And then he starts like raving in a very concerning way with this crazy look in his eyes. His eyes are like big and wide. We are the key. I get us down there. You think us out. Believe in me. Try to see what I see, how my mind works. Thrash! When I look into someone's head like a fucking x-ray, I look through walls. I dreamed him at his desk, and he like points back to Worth, designing everything. He can't let you solve the puzzle. There is a purpose. We are the purpose. The cube is us. And it's like, who the fuck is this, and where did he come from? Is he okay?
Yeah, I think we need to remove his badge.
He might need to get that taken away.
Yeah.
That's true. And then he starts like touching Levin's neck. And she's like, whoa, like what? And he continues, we fit like numbers, a man and a woman, two halves of the equation. I take you down, the perfect key. I slip you in the lock.
Ew.
Yeah, what the fuck? So like Levin jumps up with a scream and pushes Quentin away because like what is he on about? And why is he using these kinds of particular
it's like
visuals?
It's kind of crazy for him to be like, well, we know it's crazy because he literally just killed Holloway. But also it's kind of crazy to just be like, everyone else is a weakness. Mm-hmm. You and me are the strength. Let's ditch them and go on. Like that's crazy. But like I kind of can understand that mentality. The way he's delivering it, I'm like – I'm right. scared of you. What is up? What are you saying? Like, you're unhinged.
Mm-hmm. So Quentin jumps at Levin and grabs her when one of the hatches opens and Worth comes flying in. Mm. He tackles Quentin to the ground.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Worth stands between Levin and Kazan, who followed Worth in.
Okay.
This doesn't stop Quentin from rambling on and trying to convince Levin to come with him. Leave the other two behind. They're obviously spies. Holloway was too. How else would she know? How else would she know about his family? Is like something like he's very like, she knew about my kids, which is a weird thing because he told her right. about his kids. So I don't know if there was like more that was cut or like something, or if he's just like so crazy right now
mm-hmm.
that
mm-hmm.
like he doesn't like remember. And like, yeah, I think it's more that than it is anything else.
Okay.
And then like Levin comes to the realization, you dropped her, she says.
Right.
Worth tells Quentin to leave them. Give us the boot, you pig, Levin adds on. Quentin swings hard at Worth with the boot, sending him to the ground. He then walks up to a terrified Levin and whispers into her ear, you don't want the boot. Quentin turns back to Worth and beats him with the boot over and over and over before throwing him down into the hatch through the floor as like a test subject, like he is the boot.
Oh my God.
Worth falls to the floor below and just starts laughing. Quentin and Levin are put off because like, what's so funny?
Yeah.
They make their way into the room with Worth. And Kazan is here, but he's just kind of following, by the way.
Yeah.
They make their way into the room with Worth as he continues to cackle. Why do you think he's laughing? Do you have any thoughts on his hysterics right now?
Okay. My immediate thoughts go to he did know more of the purpose of the cube and the cube and it's working. Like these, like what Quentin is becoming is kind of like it's kind of like the cube turns you into like the core of who you really are over time. And he's like, yeah, not surprised. I don't know.
I like that your brain thinks more deeply than mine.
wait, what did you think?
Well, I don't even know if I thought this, but the reason he's laughing is not that complex.
Okay.
I wish it were. He's laughing because there on the floor of this room lays the body of Ren, just the way they left it.
Oh, no. So they've just done like a circle.
Mm. Worth he's just laughing. It's the Ren. It's the old Renster. And he's like, we've been going in circles.
Yeah.
Quentin can't believe that's true. So he grabs Levin by force and like shoves her into one of the hatches, screaming for her to tell him where they are.
Oh my God.
Levin pushes him away and tells him to figure it out. Do something useful for once.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone keeps to themselves for a moment while they process this. I guess you were right, Worth. There is no way out of here, Quentin mumbles, somewhat out of it. Everyone cries on their own, their hope dwindling. But Worth thinks something. He's like, wait. Wasn't Ren killed in that room? And he points over to the room where Ren had been killed. He gets up, he opens the hatch leading to that room, and there's nothing there. It's the edge.
Oh.
So what does this mean? We haven't been moving in circles.
Right.
The rooms have.
Yes, with the rumble.
Mm-hmm. Which, okay. I have stuff to talk about with that too. Just really okay. cool later. So Levin has been laying on the ground motionless, but this causes her to sit up. Of course, she says. That would explain all the mechanical sounds they've been hearing. Mm-hmm. The rooms have been shifting around them. Levin revisits the numbers with this new information in mind. The numbers, they're markers, points on a map, right? But how do you map points that keep moving?
Mm-hmm.
Permutations.
Of course.
Duh. Yeah,
I forgot about that. Yes. So I'm 100% survived because I would think that too, except
yes.
I would think that right away, like she took a while.
Yeah, I know. What the hell, girl? She's so stupid.
Yeah.
So it's like a list of all the coordinates that the room passes through, like a map that tells you where the room starts, how many times it moves, and where it moves to.
Oh, God.
Quentin is not following, much like me.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, all we really need to remember right now in this moment is that one room, remember that one room that had 27 as a coordinate?
Okay.
Because that was like weird. That was outside the cube, right? So
right.
That has to be the way out.
Mm. Oh, interesting. So like maybe it shifts outside the cube and then it connects to like the outer wall.
Right. They think of it as the bridge.
Okay, yeah.
It fills that empty space, but only when that room is in its starting position. Mm-hmm. The cube is like one big combination lock. When the rooms are at their start, the lock is open, but as soon as they shift, it closes. So the question is, where is that room and how long until it reaches that position again?
Mm-hmm.
Levin gets back to her scribblings, her mumblings about big brain number stuff, and she gets it.
Great.
So of course, the room moves to 0, 1, and 1 on the x-axis, 2, 5, and negative 7 on the y, and 1, minus 1, and 0 on the z. You know,
of course.
Right, right. So what does that mean? Quentin asks dryly. You suck at math, Quentin responds. And I was like, yeah, get it. Stupid.
Loser.
Idiot. So Levin has the others get her the numbers from the surrounding room as a reference point for whatever the hell she's doing. That's it. X is 17. Y is 25 and Z is 14, which means that this room makes two more moves before returning to its original position.
Okay.
They need to find the bridge in that time period if they want to get out. The traps might be an issue, though, because they ran out of boots. But technically, Levin tells us she could identify the traps with the numbers.
Well, we didn't even run out of boots. We still have Quentin.
Period. Period. But, like, didn't we figure out the prime number thing was bogus? Like, we can't use the numbers, right?
Right.
Well, that's true, because we were missing something. The rooms aren't identified by prime numbers. They're identified by numbers that are the power of a prime, right? You know? Yeah, right?
Yes.
So Levin isn't sure she can identify them, though, because these numbers are huge and would take a lot of work and time to calculate, and they just don't have that time.
Mm-hmm.
Quentin loses his shit when she says she can't really do it. And he's like, you have to. You have to. And she's like, I can't. Like, it's not possible.
I hate when people get mad at someone for something that they can't even do themselves.
For real. Right?
It's embarrassing.
Then, like, you do it. You do it, Quentin. He's screaming and being like, well, you better figure it out because I'm not dying in here. Like, Quentin, sit down, shut the fuck up, please. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. But why did I put butt bro?
You were feeling passionate.
Dude, the way I like write sometimes, I'm like, I don't even know where that came from. But bro, Levin yells back and it's so unintentionally hilarious. She goes, this line delivery is just poor in the film.
Oh, God.
She's just like, look, no one in the whole world could do it mentally. Look at the numbers. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 8, 5, 4, 5. There's no way I can factor that. I can't even start on 5, 6, 7. It's astronomical.
Oh, no.
From the floor, Kazan speaks up to astronomical. The group's like, what? What's going on? Levin starts quizzing him, starting with small numbers. He's able to come up with their factors on the spot.
Oh, amazing.
Then Kazan starts asking for gumdrops. Unfortunately, they do not have any gumdrops at the moment, but Worth promises him tons of gumdrops when they get out of here. So Worth opens up a hatch and starts reading off numbers for Kazan. Based on his answers, the room should be safe.
Mm-hmm.
Only one way to find out, Quentin says, grabbing Worth and just chucking him in there.
Oh my God.
Luckily, it is safe, but like, still, fuck you, Quentin.
Yeah. Also, Quentin wanting to get rid of Kazan because he thinks he's a weakness.
Yeah.
And now, I'm not hearing you thank Kazan for this. I'm not hearing it.
Nope, not at all. Opening the next hatch, Quentin continues to be an ass as he practically abuses the answer out of Kazan, but the room is safe, so everyone climbs through. Quentin climbs through last. While Quentin is in the doorway, Worth closes the door on his head and holds it there, suffocating Quentin.
Oh.
He tells Levin to hurry with Kazan, find the next room, as he's like standing there like holding him. So he does. And Worth is able to get Quentin to fall back into the previous room before shutting the door. And our group now needs to pick up the pace because they gotta like get away,
right? Let's go, yes.
So our group of three, they're running from Quinn, trying to lose him, but it's really not very easy. Yeah. So they try something else instead. They let him in to this room that they're in, but Worth is hiding in the room below where they are. So when Quentin passes over the hatch, he opens it and Quentin falls through the hatch, hitting his head on the ground where blood immediately pools. Okay. Oh, shucks. We are so sad.
Thank God. I'm a little sad because I really wanted to, like, get out of here and, like, just destroy his life outside of here and make him live a terrible life. Like, death is just – it's, like, a little bit of a scapegoat for him, it feels. Right.
It's a cop-out for sure.
Yeah.
So the rest of the group continues moving. So now we have Worth, we have Levin, and we have Kazan. And they find what looks like a cube-shaped elevator shaft at one point. And Levin peeks her head through, but quickly she has to retreat as a cube descends rapidly into the spot next to them. It's kind of cool, and it, of course, confirms their theory that the cubes are all moving around them.
Mm-hmm.
But they jump into this newly arrived room, and the room they just left begins to rumble before Kazan has had a chance to follow them. The room descends, and he's gone.
Oh, no.
Worth and Levin stand in shock for a moment before they can suddenly hear Kazan still wailing, calling for help, so they know he's still nearby.
Uh-huh.
Worth heads off to find him, and while she's in this room alone, Levin steps on something sharp on the ground. Picking it up, she sees that it's a small triangular shard of glass.
Oh.
She holds it up to her glasses, and it fits perfectly in the empty spot. A knowing look crosses her face. And she calls for Worth to get back here quickly. This room's next move takes it to the bridge. I don't know if you remember, her glasses fell off and broke at the beginning of the movie.
Okay.
So she finds that piece of glass in this room.
Yep.
So Worth finds Kazan and hurries back with him. And they make it safely into the room just before it drops. It hits the ground hard and jostles everyone. And Levin goes ahead and fills them in. This was the room that they started in together. She was right. They never should have moved to begin with.
Wow, that's so crazy.
Right? Yeah, I kind of like that detail, even though it's like very like cliche on the nose. Like, I still think it's really fun.
Yeah.
So they open the door to reveal what should be the bridge, and they climb inside. Kazan slowly turns the handle and opens this outer door. Bright light pools into the room as Levin begins to cry. They made it. Worth takes a seat on the floor. "Go ahead," he says. Levin tells him that this isn't his fault. He can't give up now. "I have nothing to live for out there," he says.
Oof.
"What is out there?" Levin asks, kind of with this like profound tone. "Boundless human stupidity," says Worth, and it's like, well, yeah, she laughs, and she's like, yeah, I can live with that. I can live with that. But in the background, we hear the sound of a door opening.
Oh.
Levin gasps, and her eyes go wide, and she doesn't move when a trickle of blood comes from her mouth. She's lifted into the air, a sharp metal object speared through her chest.
What?
As she drops to the floor, Quentin is revealed behind her, his eyes absolutely crazy, his face, his clothes, body covered in blood.
Are you kidding me?
I know. I'm also upset.
I'm very upset. Like, does that make sense? Like, is it really stupid? Like, did he look really dead? Or is it believable?
It's believable, but also because he hits the ground and he's like out and the blood pools from his head.
Yeah.
So you would think dead, but here he is.
That's so annoying. Okay.
Yeah. So Worth loses it on Quentin and attacks him. Mm-hmm. "Kazan, get through that door," he screams.
Mm-hmm.
And those are his final words before Quentin uses the piece of metal to stab Worth in the stomach.
Oh my God.
Which, by the way, the piece of metal that he's using is the handle of one of the doors. He like broke it off, like one of the T-bars.
Yeah. How does he – it's just annoying too, because it's like, fine, be alive, but how do you have the strength for this after you're taking that hit?
I think
it's so annoying.
He's just insane at the moment. Like, I think being in here is just like, that's the only explanation.
Adrenaline insanity. Yeah.
Yeah. So Kazan climbs through the door to the outside and Quentin goes to follow when something stops him. A hand grabs a fistful of his shirt and it's Worth.
Mm.
Quentin is fighting against him, trying to get outside, half of his body in the room, half of it out. The room begins to rumble before it makes one swift move to the left and descends. A large, bright red blood smear covers the wall. We watch as Worth lays down and dies on the floor next to Levin.
Mm-hmm.
Kazan stands in the bright white doorway looking around curiously. He walks into the light and the movie ends.
What?
Yeah. So this is, we'll do our score stuff first. And I want you to know that I watched two videos on this movie and read a shit ton of stuff because I wanted to make sure I understood it before I sat here and talked to you about it.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wait, I don't get it. So we will talk about some of the reasons for this movie existing. But first, let's talk about surviving.
Yes.
Which we obviously did.
yeah.
We have five questions for Act 3. So 3A, do you let someone else take the role of swinging to the other wall?
Oh, yeah. I could be convinced, but I would more likely want it to be someone else because I wouldn't trust the makeshift rope. Like, that never works.
I was thinking that too, yeah.
So I'd be nervous about that. And if I could be like, I'm 2 pounds heavier than you, I'd take it. I would take it and run. So yeah, I'm going to say, would I let someone else do it? I'm going to say, like a 82%.
Okay. I gave myself a 45 because I would like to make someone else do it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'm always the one that's looked at to sit in the middle seat in the car because of my size. And I feel like that would happen in this situation. And if I truly was the smallest person in the room,
you have to then.
I'd be like, fine. Like, yeah. So that's why I gave myself 45.
Okay, that makes sense.
I would let that happen. 3B, do you figure out that the rooms are moving and calculate the permutations?
No. So I know the rooms are moving.
Right.
But no, calculate the permutations, zero.
Yeah, zero. I gave myself a zero. Because ain't no way. So 3C, can you calculate the powers of primes?
I'm going to give myself I'm literally right now trying to figure out how you do that. Because like for an easy number, it's just this times this equals this. Even like it has to be the same number that folds into the prime number an even amount of times. And that makes it the power.
Does it have to do with like squared? Like 12 squared is 144. Like, is that what powers are?
Yeah, powers are like it can be to the second, to the third, to the fourth, to the fifth.
Gotcha.
So, okay. So if I'm right on that, then I'll give myself like a 26%.
Okay, damn.
But like they're really big. But they're really big numbers. So actually like a 16.
Okay. I give myself a zero.
Okay.
because no, I don't even know what they're talking about through the entire movie. 3D, do you immediately leave the room when seeing the light?
Yeah. Oh, I'm running. Let's all run together.
Yeah. Even if
I'm not wasting time.
Worth sits down and is like, go without me. Do you leave him there?
Yeah. Yeah. I would get up on the thing and make sure I'm not in the room anymore. And then I would turn back to him and I would talk to him and try to get him to come with. But I need to make sure I'm good. And
that's
then
fair.
I'm going to try to get you to come with.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would say literally like a 91%.
Okay. I gave myself a 35.
Mm-hmm.
I think in my head, I do want to get out quick, but I'm also like, I have as much time as we know these. Like, we know how long it takes before another room moves. So I'm thinking I have that much time. And I'll cut it off, like, 2 minutes before it moves. Like, I'm getting out.
Oh, wow.
You know?
I would still be not convinced that I'm not being watched.
True.
So I'd be like, what if they don't want us to get out? Like, I need to get through that door as soon as possible before they change the rules on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If there was a they, which I don't know if there is.
Right. And then 3E, which is our final question. Do you successfully kill Quentin?
Like, with the amount of rage that man gives me, you know, sometimes we're like, I don't know if I could stab someone. Like, even if this person's just a random killer trying to kill me,
right?
I don't know if I can stab someone. It's freaky. It freaks me out. But the amount of rage that this man gave me, I feel like I'd be ready to fight. Like, I'd be in
valid.
I'd be like running on my full capacity of what I'm capable of because mm-hmm. of my anger toward this man.
Yeah.
So I would say, can I do it though? I'm just going to say like a 48%.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I gave myself a 12.
Okay.
I'm not a very strong person. So it's hard for me to see a way in which that works.
Grab the, you know, it's like a grab and dig your thumbs into the eyes thing. It's true. Like a bite you wherever I see skin. Like, it's mm-hmm. that kind of shit where, like, you don't have to be strong enough. You have to be angry enough.
True.
Yeah. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
Cassie's like, nah, fuck that. I'm killing this man.
Yeah.
Like, that's happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So you can calculate all of that evenly to get your third X score. But we do have a bonus question that we will talk mm-hmm. about in a moment.
Okay. So it's bringing me to it's bringing me to a 47%.
Third act, 47.
The third act, that's crazy.
I have an 18.
I'm delusional. I'm just so angry and delusional right now, which I feel like this doesn't happen to me often. I actually think this happens to you a lot, where you're like, fuck that. I don't care. Fuck them kids. You know what I mean? Like,
so true.
That's how I feel about Quentin, which I think is like boosting me much higher.
I think it's so much easier to come from that perspective too when you haven't seen the movie, because I definitely do that too. I think of Better Watch Out, where I'm like, no. Yeah. I was just like, no. No, that's not happening.
Yeah.
Okay. So we are going to have a bonus question that is going to serve. It's not really act four, but it's just, it's like it's an act four question. And in our final, it will be worth four. Mm-hmm. And that is because I would like to ask you, overall, did your math knowledge help you escape the cube?
Right. So I'm going to give myself a 7% there.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fair. I gave myself a 0.
Okay.
Because the math is so heavy in this movie, which is also why I didn't do deadly questions today either, because it's like one thing leads to another thing leads to another thing, and it's like the math is actually the deadliest part of it all.
Agreed.
As opposed to the traps, because you can avoid the traps if you can do the math. And I just know I wouldn't be doing the math.
Yeah, I'm happy you're including that, because looking at like my ACT scores, I need the math overall to bring me down. It brought me down. Yes. That's what brought me down in these scores. But it's like so integral to what's going on here that it needs to bring me down even more.
No, I felt the same way. I literally did this multiple times because I also was getting scores that felt too high. Yeah. And so I was like, how do I bring this down but like keep it math?
Yes.
So you can take your 1, 2, and 3 score and 1, 2, 3, and 4 and weight them 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay. My final score comes out to a 27%.
27. Okay. And mine was an 11 overall. Mm-hmm. So that gives us a group score of 19. And I'm okay with that. Initially, my overall was over 20. And for me, that felt too high. So I like that we're under 20.
Yeah.
And I think it also works because this is a situation where I'm really in the scores emphasizing would you. Mm-hmm. But part of the point of the cube is that these people seem, or it seems that these people have skills that help. So you would have people around you who maybe would have these other skills.
Yes.
So I think like a 19 feels good because you're going to be relying hopefully on somebody else.
Yeah, I like the 19.
The 19 feels good. And I would like to talk about some stuff about the movie now that I couldn't talk about before because it just was very heavy on spoilers. So fun thing about this film is it was inspired very heavily, supposedly, by Hitchcock's movie Lifeboat, which I've never seen, but it's a film, I guess, that takes place entirely in a lifeboat.
Interesting.
So from that perspective of having a very isolated environment. Mm-hmm. And the entire film used one set, which was one full cube and a half of another, so that perspective shots could be done.
Yeah.
And they had one functioning hatch door, and all the other ones were fake, so they couldn't move that.
Wait, does that mean, because obviously sometimes they're like on a wall and on a ceiling and on a floor. Mm-hmm. Does that mean they moved the set or they just moved the camera angle?
I think it was the camera angle.
Or they did they move the door? I don't know if it can move. I don't know how they did it.
Oh, I think they moved the door.
Okay.
But like another interesting thing about this was they shot it. The like, so there were initially six colors that the rooms could be. They ended up cutting one of the colors for budget reasons. Because I guess initially, like, the number six was very prominent in this film. There were, like, six characters, and it was supposed to be, like, six colors, blah, blah, blah. They ended up just cutting one for budget.
Okay.
But the way they shot the film was all scenes in one color were done. And, like, at a time. Because they shot this only in 21 days for a budget of 700K Canadian.
Wow.
So I think that's, I don't know, I find it really cool, like, when you have a set like this, like, all the ways that you work around things. And the script had many iterations, as does every script. But one of the interesting things that was cut was initially the script had a lot of scenes that were done outside of the cube, which I'm most curious about because I'm like, what were your initial thoughts on, like, what was going on outside? I wonder if they showed those moments of what they were doing before they were taken, like, that I could totally see being part of it. But I think cutting all that stuff is also a fine choice because it just, it's like, just messes with your head a lot in that way. Oh, this you're gonna love or hate. I think this, I literally wrote super cool. So the set's warehouse was near a train line and its noise was incorporated into the film as that of the cubes moving. Which is I love that. Funny because I'm like, okay, so what do we need to incorporate the train into the podcast? Like, we need, like, how do we do this? How do we take notes?
Oh my gosh, that's so funny. You have to, like, leave the train rumbling in the background at some point.
I probably will. That's a great point.
Or, like, steal it and then just put it under. Put that audio under us talking about the rumble.
Oh my God, I should. Wait, that's so good. Also, so like I said, the cube's lights were changed with panels and they talked about how the actors hated the red because it was just like very, like, to be in a red light up room all day, like, just kind of fucks with you. Cause like red, like, we have both used LED lights. Have you used? So, you know, like, the red is just like a weird feeling whenever I use those red ones.
Yeah. It's like, it's dark or sexy. It's not something you want to live in and feel just like casual in.
Exactly. And of course, they did have a math consultant on the film, and his name is David W. Pravica. Sorry, sir. Okay. So I'm going to read this for anyone who cares because this actually helped me understand the numbers a little bit more. It's just like a quick little thing I stole from Wikipedia. So here we go if you care. Each room is labeled with three identification numbers such as 517, 478, 565. These numbers encode the starting coordinates of the room, and the X, Y, and Z coordinates are the sums of the digits of the first, second, and third number, respectively. So the way she got those numbers was simply, like, for 517, she added 517. Then she added 478 to get another coordinate, and then she added 565 to get another coordinate. So that part's actually not that complicated.
Sure.
And would also explain how, like, the 27 works, because 999 would be the highest number you could have, and that would give you 27. So to, like, get, like, the bridge number would have been a 999 room. So I found that, like, like, that makes sense.
Yep.
And then the numbers also determine the movement of the room. The subsequent – this part I still don't get. The subsequent positions are obtained by cyclically subtracting the digits from one another, and the resulting numbers are the then successively added to the starting numbers. So for anyone who understands that, there you go. But for me, that means nothing, that part.
I think the only thing that, like, clarifies for me is, like, how it can work as a cycle, you know, like the movement of the cycle.
Right, right. The digits from one another. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is cool. It's kind of fun. And another side note, this film actually tanked when it came out in Canada, did really well in France and Japan. And then there is a Japanese remake that came out in 2021 of this movie, which I definitely need to watch.
Yeah.
Because I'll be intrigued. The last thing that I want to say before, if you have things you want to say about the complication that is what the fuck was this movie. Yeah. I watched a couple YouTube videos on this movie and the ways that people interpret it. And I feel like a lot of people, like what I took from the movie was pretty much the way other people felt, where it's very open and you can take a lot of different things kind of depending on where your head's at. This one comment, though, on one of the videos I really liked that said, I always saw Cube as an allegory of corporate waste and misallocation of resources. Mm. We're creating something that has no fundamental purpose other than the purpose of creation.
Mm.
Because that conversation that Worth has is like kind of like the pinnacle of the movie, which is why I kept okay. so much of it in.
Yeah.
But it's so like obscure and abstract in the moment yeah. that it's like hard to be like, it's like, what are you talking about? So most people look at this movie as like a take on corporations and the people who work within them and the fact that they can't get out once they're in and it drives them crazy and all of this stuff. And I don't know if that's the intention, yeah. but I think
I know
it's
I'm sad
cool.
that like the people who made this movie didn't like talk about it. And, yeah. like, give us their take on what they created here.
Because
mm-hmm. This is one where I wish badly that existed. But I definitely, like, went more down the route of, I guess actually this works with the corporation aspect of it as far as, like, the monotony of, like, a 9-to-5.
Mm.
And, like, work, like, cubicle work that doesn't feel like it matters at all.
Right.
Like it does have a purpose in a way that the cube apparently doesn't, but it kind of feels like it literally has no purpose and you have no yeah. purpose or fulfillment. And I feel like that extreme, like the cube is an extreme of that mm-hmm. monotony, and people become like the core, like I said before, like the core of who they really are when you're right. stuck without purpose.
Yeah.
Obviously, we see them like desperate to create one,
mm-hmm.
and they do. But like, as far as being able to escape and hoping there's better, then like, I just feel like Quentin is just an example of like, wow, you are a piece of shit at heart, and being mm-hmm. stuck in this monotonous space just proves that.
Yep.
And yep. and seeing how it affects him versus how it affects others, and I mean, yeah, also just. Kazan being the only one to get out and survive, mm. I feel like he was portrayed as like just the most innocent of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone else died because they succumbed to the evilness of themselves or the evilness of someone else.
Right. Yeah.
But then Kazan was able to escape because I think he was just like the most innocent yeah. He was himself here just like he was yeah, anywhere else.
That's true.
Unlike everybody else. So I don't really know what all of those thoughts even mean put together, but that's that's where I'm at.
You know, and thinking about it, this is probably what the director ultimately wanted, simply because I happen to know that one of the other iterations of the script was done in a way where they were all criminals and this was a punishment. Mm. So that tells me that it was more of like a concept that they wanted to work with, but didn't necessarily know the purpose of the concept.
Sure. Yeah.
So,
wrong answers.
Exactly. So I think you can kind of run with it, however. And there's a lot out there on this film. I didn't watch everything because there is a prequel and a sequel. So I forgot about
interesting.
That.
Interesting.
I didn't watch any of the things on all of it, because I was like, I might want to watch those movies at right. some point. So
yeah,
that is what I have.
Wow.
For Cube, a very weird little sci-fi, strange, horror, bizarreness moment.
This kind of reminds me a little bit of The Platform, where they are yeah. stuck in that prison in that
yeah.
instance. Criminals in a prison, other than our main character who just went in willingly for a degree. Yeah, and it's also, I wonder if it took any inspiration from this, because this kind of right. feels like a blueprint of what The Platform could have been, especially in like the themes of like the allegorical and psychological horror yeah, of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And speaking of inspiration, quick side note, there is a video game called Half Dead that is like a co-op game that basically is Cube.
You're
like
God.
With your friends and you have shoes and you throw them into the different rooms and try to find the safe room. Yeah.
Oh, whoa.
And you have to like go through obstacles to get through rooms. Yeah. So basically it like a lot, I think a lot of people, yeah, we would. A lot of people don't know that it's Cube, because it's not like it's made by the Cube. It's just like, but it's Cube. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's the exact same thing. So maybe we should play that someday.
Maybe.
And die, because we would.
Yeah.
But yeah, guys, that's Cube. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. Be sure to check us out over on Instagram at I'd Survive Podcast. Over there, you can also find a link to our Discord where you two can submit your score, fill out the worksheet with us, answer all the questions to get your own survivability score. So let us know, guys, would you survive?